Good morning, everybody. Thanks very much for joining this next episode of Empowered Teams podcast. As you can see, the main title today is about epic fail stories of bad performance and leadership, which I'm sure doesn't relate to you guys at all. All right. But it sets the context of a conversation that we were having about a week ago that talked about the aspiration of, in the gaming world, called get good. Right? How do you get good? How do you get better at what you're doing? And how do you focus on daily and weekly activities as against having long-term personal development plans, as against having a yearly review? Something that makes a difference in the now to the way that you engage peer-to-peer coaching and coaching that comes from working with seniors who may have different ideas, may have different ways, but that you're touching human performance and looking how to make a difference as and when it happens, and putting that in relationship of the fear of failure, of the fear of getting it wrong. I'd like to welcome Eden Smith team to this podcast, and I'd like them to introduce themselves just very quickly. My name is Toby. I'm the captain of the Sunk team. And without further ado.
I don't know what side to which way you're pointing, but last time I went first.
It was kind of you, actually.
So Nicholas Deveni, I lead our consultative part of the business, helping businesses in their transformations to be more data and sustainability driven. I'll pass over to Krista.
Hi, I'm Krista Swain, and I lead marketing.
Thanks, Krista. I'm Jez, one of the co-founders and CEO of Eden Smith.
Right. Thanks very much. I mean, I think the key thing in kicking this off, guys, right, is to have a view on what you guys mean by leadership performance, right, and failing. You know, what how do you balance that? You know, because generally, failing is not a good thing, is it? I mean, failing is like a career-ending move. You know.
Depends how you look at it, right? So I think failing is learning. I've actually spoken, there's a business that I know quite close to me, not our own one obviously, but they have a monthly cock up championships presentation where they take all of the biggest mess ups throughout the month and celebrate that, and then give an award for the biggest screw up that happened that month in the company. And everybody hears about what actually happened and shares it. And I think it gives us a safe place to talk about failure. And it also celebrates failure and the fact that you learn from failure, and also shares and gives a bit of direction to other people in the business about, you know, what maybe not to do. And this was the impact, and therefore might change behavior. So I don't see failure as being a bad thing, I think, and we do it all the time.
But that's a relatively new appreciation in business, right? We go back, 8-10 years, and that wasn't the view, right? And I think there's still a few businesses that are struggling to make that change and to give the psychological safety to say you made a mistake, to say you failed, or to say, you know, actually this month my performance isn't as great as it could be.
It's also about giving that permission for people to fail and to take risks and to innovate and be creative without that fear of falling down and someone going, you did it wrong.
Mm. Absolutely. But and also what we're talking about right now in failure, if you compare what you're looking at when you speak of failure, a lot of it is around an action, something that happened, a task that was supposed to be performed where it went wrong or something like that. But then look at how business performance is measured, and that's typically around KPIs and output. I see where I see there being a gap in where leadership team should focus on the company or the people is that middle bit. It's the middle ground. So it's not just about, did you meet your targets? Was it a failure to miss your targets? Well, not necessarily, because you don't really understand the reasons why. But often the reason that that's happened is because of behavior of the business, or how what approach was taken, or whether feedback was shared, or whether the right questions were asked. And what we're trying to do is get those two things working in comparison. And unless you have conversations or you share what went wrong, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to fix that the next time round. So you get repeat failure. And, you know, you get onto that hamster wheel of the same thing happening again, which can be an issue, in my opinion.
In the data world, we talk about this as measuring the wrong metrics, right? And metrics drive behavior. So, yeah. And I think, you know, if we and just talk about this, the stories of, you know, stories of bad performance and stuff like that, we've come from an industry in the recruitment world where there is a lot of different views of what performance looks like and what high performing teams looks like, right? And I think, you know, we've known stories of, you know, people who would set a KPI in that sense, you know, like you've got to get 3 hours, 5 hours on the phone before you're allowed to go home, you know, or we're taking your chairs away, you know, that kind of those kind of behaviors. And what you end up doing is you end up people calling and sitting on hold for hours on end just to hit their KPIs, but that doesn't necessarily lead to good performance, right?
Right.
If I think back at all the stories, it's not bad performance. It actually comes down to bad leadership, right? We can skip them two words in the middle of the title. And a story, it's the bad leadership that leads to bad performance.
It's measuring people's performance using the wrong metrics. That's the issue with it, right? So people celebrate success even when there's been quite a lot of failure throughout the same process. And that's what Nick's talking about. There are, in the world of staffing, where so many employees are measured based on very stringent KPI output, it actually means that sometimes if there are, for example, and Nick talks about this a lot, if there's a consultant working 10 requirements and they fill 3 of them, they get celebrated in the sales meeting for doing an amazing job. But actually, across the 10 requirements, 7 customers were left unhappy. So if you look at the whole project, it was a massive failure. But the way that they're measured and what is perceived to be good performance isn't actually correct, in my view. And this is where you get into a value conversation of what the staffing industry does outside of anything else.
I think that's an important thing, the norms and values.
Right? Yeah.
Because that indicates the culture.
Yeah.
It's your norms and values. Norms is, you know, what's right and wrong. Values is, you know, is what's good and bad. And sometimes within this, you come with an implicit template of rules that are not discussed. And what you end up having there, what is technically called skilled incompetence, that is, you're measuring you think that by measuring these things, we're going to improve performance, but don't. You actually disengage the whole of the workforce.
Well, yeah. You're dealing with people, right? that's the point. I think it's hard because I think sometimes we bring, you know, we all come into the workplace at various different ages through after various different educational, you know, pathways and or non-educational pathways. And I think we forget sometimes, or we treat some stuff sometimes like as if like, oh, they're new to the workplace. We need to teach them the norms, the values, the ways to do stuff. But actually what we're teaching them is technically skills that have been working for the last 5 to 10 years. And they're a new generation coming over through with new values, with new skills, with new ideas. You know, I know of a business who they were very, you know, a good team and they get their jobs done very well and they're under quite a stressful scenario, but they kind of got a telling off from their manager and the manager came on the Zoom call, the video call and literally said to them, right, I want everyone to put their hands on their head so I know you're not talking behind like while we're having this meeting because it's serious. and like treat them like they're back in school, you know, like everyone sit down, fingers to their lips, you know, that kind of thing. And it's when you look at stories like that that you think, my God, that actually happens in business. That actually happens in the
even worse than that. In American companies and some companies now, they have AI systems that measure your fingers on a keyboard. All right, that measure your eyes in contact with this, that measure everything. And for me, as a kind of, you know, coach, when looking at teams, to me, that's a failure of leadership.
Mm-hmm. All right? This is where trust comes in, isn't it? It's, you can't measure those metrics and be like, you weren't doing this at this particular time. You can't speak down to people and say, I've been here doing this for longer than you, I'm superior to you, I know everything. As Nick said, it's a changing, evolving landscape, and we need that collaboration. We need to be able to listen to new ideas, and that's true leadership, is being able to scaffold someone and support them on their learning journey, but also make sure that you are learning from them as well. It's not top down.
No, absolutely, but right.
The permission begins top down.
The
permission. Doesn't this go back to that again? That providing a framework or the governance in which people have enough freedom to operate. And be creative and be able to do stuff without constantly having to go through an advisory board to have a decision made. Right, that's where all this stuff, I think, goes wrong. And I'm not saying that it works up to a certain size, but then you start having to maybe look at the processes a bit more and things like that.
I think it can work beyond that size, right? Beyond a certain size. But I think where I disagree, and maybe this is coming from the technology world and, you know, and transformation programs, I do believe there has to be some level of governance and testing and feedback loop to make progress. So, you know, I think there has to be fail safes in place. There has to be gates that you need to pass before you can get to the next level. That doesn't mean that gate is opened by the top person in the organization or by a senior leadership. I believe those gates could be, you know, delegated to other levels.
Absolutely.
But those governance controls have to be in place regardless. You can have all the trust in the world with someone.
No, but if you take it around the other way and you make the team responsible for the creations of the governance roles, that means then instead of top down, you actually get this ownership. Because really, you know, Gallup tells us that across the world, the employees are not engaged.
Yeah.
And the biggest obstacle to them being engaged is their bosses. Mm-hmm. And the level of hate that they have for their bosses is visceral, and it's measured, right? The thing that's missing is exactly what you just described, which is engaging them as human beings, right? With honesty and transparency. And I think it comes back to the root cause, I think, of failure is fear. It's fear, being senior management, about not achieving your targets. So you revert back to caveman style of management,
yeah.
or slave gallery approach to, you know, you guys will do this, you know, because I need my bonus next month. Or you have fear of that the employees will not do something that moves the business forward that may be new, because fear of getting it wrong, the punishment is so bad or the consequences are so bad that they wait to be told. Now, just one example of that is in the video game simulations that we deploy, that we work together on. One of the consistent features that we find between teams is the person that's sitting in the video game at the bottom of the stairs waiting. And you ask them, well, what are you waiting for? Well, I'm waiting to be told what to do. Mm. And shocking. They're part of a team and they're waiting. And so there's that sense of what you just described of the person grows in an area where there's safety, but there's pressure, because you can't have no pressure. And then they can start to do something in listening to you guys talk, then you help them make that jump across the fear barrier, right? But I think coming back to your point before, Nick, that's quite new. There are many organizations that, sorry, go on.
As I said, I hope that maybe I'll get into that age now where I'm a little bit more longer toothed, but I don't feel that my journey has been that long ago. And, you know, there's stories of where I was told that was the way to manage, right? That and don't get me wrong, the other businesses I've been in went through loads of leadership training and we took a slightly different approach. But there were times where, you know, you started work at this time, and if you weren't ready to start work at that time, I'm going to make you start work at that time, you know. I actually haven't apologized to the guy, and maybe I should reach out to him in like an AA style meeting, I don't know. But you know, there's one guy, and he's only young, and he's still eating his breakfast at 8:31. I just picked up the whole thing and put the whole bowl in the bin, milk, cereal in a black bag in the bin, right? And it was just like, I've told you many times before, we've had this discussion. This is the time you start work. You don't have your breakfast at that time. You start work at that time. But now looking back, I think, oh my God, what a stupid thing to do. What a monster.
Nick.
Yeah, I know. No, guess it now.
I'm actually interested in Krista's point of view, because I think in Krista's role, it comes with a requirement of a different viewpoint and focus. And you're very outbound, right?
Yeah.
We think in Krista's role as marketing director, what you're doing is you're representing the business from an external perspective or pushing out external messages all the time. What would you define as failure? And how do you, like, when you see something going wrong, because the impact actually is from what I would call a global position. If you send out the wrong message, the positioning of the whole business could be wrong, right? So how do you... No, I know it's a hard question, but how do you deal with that? Because, I mean, for us, it's like internal tasks, you know, project, blah, 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 KPI recruitment, la, la, la. But you're holistic.
Yeah, well, I guess it's from a very gut instinct, which sounds like the worst answer.
We're a data business, Krista. It's not gut instinct.
No. I love
it doesn't stick within sort of like frameworks that you can then roll out and pass on, because but I know that, Jez, we've had that conversation about gut mind and what that means, and it's using that very much in the same way that you would use data to inform what you're doing. You have to have that personal touch on it and step back and go, well, was this, what were the reasons? What you can do is one thing one day and it lands perfectly, and you can think you're doing a replication of that and it doesn't. So looking for the reasons for that can sometimes be going down a black hole that you don't need to investigate, because it can take you nowhere. And you can spend an awful lot of time trying to get to that point. But I think it really is, in terms of the leadership side within that, it's about looking at that data, using your gut, and just knowing that you've got a team around you who can give you that honest feedback about where you've gone wrong. And if you open yourself up to failure and you ask people to give you feedback, then you get a greater understanding, because there's nothing worse than asking people for feedback and having that fear factor that people don't want to insult you, because how do you then progress?
Mm-hmm. We've had it in the scenario of the business game simulation, and Toby, you'll probably have to speak more around this, as it were, a team who, you know, literally spent the whole time arguing in the planning phase, and the CEO just left the constraints of the first part of the stage of the game and went off and done their own thing. And you know, is that feedback? Well, why did you do that? Well, because they were all arguing, I had enough of it, and I didn't want any parts of it, so I was just going to go and sort it out. Yeah, he got bored, that's it. But it's like, there's a part that says, you're the CEO, like, this is your business, this is the people that you work with, like, how how are you going to react if that happens in real life, right? Is that a sign of your leadership?
If we can take the golden thread from what you're just saying, one of the things that we see when we do the simulation versus doing a role play in a training room or something like that, yeah, is fear of failure. It is in from senior directors, senior management teams to junior management teams, the thing that comes in there is failure. Right? And we see this, and we spend a lot of our time helping people to make small mistakes. That it's okay to experiment, that it's okay to explore. It's okay to say stupid things. In fact, we encourage them to say, the stupider the idea, the better the idea. They're like, what? Yeah. There is no right answer. What there is exploration. So particularly in the simulation that we've got, so coming back to what gut instinct is, one of the biggest obstacles, for example, to innovation is the way that you think and your behavior, right? And the framework around that. And typically, if it's something that constrains you and that you've got a framework that locks you in, it doesn't look out, you still need a framework. The question is whether the framework is open to ideas or this is the only way of doing it. You know, there's an open culture or a closed culture. You see this in small teams.
Would it be fair to say then that in that scenario that Nick was just talking about, the only reason that the team were arguing was because they had the fear factor that no one wanted to get it wrong. And so the leadership are looking at it going, well, that's no good. So I'm just going to go and get something kicked off and start it. I mean, I would like to think that in the same scenario, my team would actually have a conversation and then they'd go off exploring. That's what I'd like to think would happen. I mean, I don't, you know, we have played the simulation a number of times, and actually I think I failed it straight away because I just went and got caught. It's not that I went out without planning. I wanted everyone to get out of the van.
So then, right, coming back to what you're saying, particularly your leadership style and that, you encourage forward failure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. As a gamer, right, you can only learn through forward failure. Oh, we got that wrong. Let's go the other way. Right. But you only knew that you got that wrong because you tried.
Well, that's the whole point, right? And the beauty of the simulation is you can fail and fail and fail like 50 times within the space of an hour.
Yeah.
But every time there is progress.
Some success. You've got to throw in some success and celebrate some of it there, right? But I think, Jez, I think you're right there. There was nothing wrong with that CEO getting out of the van and going exploring and seeing what's the lay of the land, what's the landscape, market research, right? Nothing wrong with that. What was wrong is that the team left behind didn't have that trust or that the right skills and the right mentality to work without the CEO giving them direction of, oh, what should we do?
But that's the point. But more importantly, did then the CEO go, I wonder why my team did that? Because that's the leadership. That's going back and going, guys, why are you sat in the van? Like, what you really bothered about?
So why are you having this argument? Yeah, exactly. So what comes up, right, is that nobody talks about, I mean, I'm not a total fan of doing assessments for leadership or emotional intelligence, and I think they're useful, but actually the simulation is much more of a mirror straight away into your own behavior and the behavior that other people can see. What it lifts up immediately is the norms and values, right? What is the implicit template you have of what leadership is? Is it command and control? All right? And that you're sitting waiting, and you will not, even though you'll have a discussion, because you've learned to have discussions, but you will not move unless the person says so. You will wait. All right? So people bring to the table already a set of habits that are pre-established about what the right way to do something is, what's good or bad. So I what think you're that... doing in the simulation is you're unraveling that and you're helping them get empowered to do something themselves. That's what the leader does. The leader helps the team move forward, right? So that decisions are made collectively, but with guidance. Sorry, I interrupted something.
Krista.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say it's about being reflective, isn't it? And what Jez said was he'd go, well, but why has that happened? And I think having that reflective process being built into your leadership style and understanding, having empathy, inquiring about why things are happening is so important. And I think that's why it's so nice within this simulation, is because you have that opportunity where you're out of your immediacy, you're out of your familiar workplace, but you're being thrown into a workplace simulation, and you've got the coach there to kind of go, did you realize you did that? Why did that happen? And I think that trains us to be much more reflective. I mean, I worked in education for about 16 years. And the whole pedagogy of education is about being a reflective practitioner. And I think I've brought that into the commercial world as well. And I think that's such an important thing. And it almost carries on from the question Jez asked me earlier about how do you improve?
Absolutely. I think there's a thing in what you said, because you used the word empathy. Mm. Right. So immediately then into emotional intelligence. Well, one of the things that you see in leadership styles that makes people frightened is irritation and anger that comes from the mood that leaders carry into a room, right? And that irritation and mood, implicitly, because it's not necessarily explicit, just somebody says, ooh, we need to get out of Dodge here. You know, seriously,
don't they, where they just bring doom in and it's just like, oh, and everyone's on their tender hooks. And other people, you can just like not see it. But yeah, some people impregnate a room with their...
Absolutely. Nothing. So a soft skill is not just about, am I better at communication? A soft skill is about emotional self-regulation, which means you have to have self-awareness, which means you have to be able to reflect. You see there, the trace point comes there. Many times we've seen people make decisions in the simulation because somebody's really irritated because they keep failing. So they stop pursuing. And that irritation, it's like, I don't know, daddy or mummy's irritated today, so we mustn't upset them. We mustn't confront them, the fact that they're doing this. Well, actually, it's a great opportunity. Because we've seen people who are having difficulty with the door code in the simulation, for example, where they demand that the whole team and everybody's quiet while they do the door code. What? I mean, that's it. And this team of people are high top business consultants. I mean, Eric is sitting in the background doing the production of this, but he'll remember it very well when we sat there like jaws hitting the deck, that this person's irritation can stop the whole function of the team. So you've got this other dimension to failure, which is an emotional
especially when you bring that into again, we're people, right? We have lives outside of business, right? We get irritated and frustrated by things that are not necessarily business context, and we have our own emotions and, you know, bodies to handle. So if you think in that business scenario, something completely unrelated to the performance of the organization, the performance of the business, could actually stop the whole business working because that individual was frustrated or, you know, irritated for that day.
Fair to say, though, that the simulation, which what I like about it is it pulls out your other profiles. So we all have a work style and a personal style. There's no doubt about that, right? We definitely shift or we change elements of our profiles when we go into work mode. So when you go into the simulation, that's typically what is going on. The interesting part about it is it's actually probably mixing the two quite a lot, because it's in a simulation and it's like a game. You're probably in your personal profile, but then you get challenged with certain tasks, which then get you here. And then, of course, you've got your team around you as well. So you're trying to apply the work profile, but you're playing a game, and then people get irritated and your behavior and the way that you react. Because I can imagine that there would be people that would get very frustrated. And in the scenario that Toby was talking about a second ago, where someone's asking someone to be really quiet, it's kind of like being in a boardroom and everyone's talking, you're trying to get your point across. And it's like, can everyone just be quiet? Like, it happens a lot, you know, when you've got these big meetings and stuff like that. And depending on how you deliver that message, whether you've got a smile on your face, the tone of your voice, the words that you use, will actually depict whether they're receptive or not to continue with the process in either a meeting or in the simulation.
Yep.
And you've got to be really, really careful of that, because it's about energy and maintaining whether they're still happy to work in that environment of freedom to make decisions and go and explore, which is
what you want to do. Respond to that instruction if it's become a bit aggressive, because they might do it out of fear, out of any other emotion, but it's how receptive they then are to the rest of that meeting. Or have you just put everyone in that room into a giant drop? I mean, well, I remember being in a it was in an education environment, and I really respected the leader and had some good conversations with him, but he did have an element of distilling fear in people. So he was just like, so our values, our ethos, beginning of new year, does everyone agree with it? And everyone's like, yes, perfect, yes. We went around this table and there's about 30 of us and I was near the end. And I went, on paper, it's amazing, but do you think we've actually instilled it within our school? And everyone just went, ooh. Looked at me with horror, and then the head kind of just smiled, laughed and went, you've absolutely nailed it. And then they all looked at me in horror again, because I'd challenged but also been given praise for challenge, when they all knew that they were being unauthentic in their own response. It's a really interesting dynamic to see play
psychology.
Yeah.
So guys, we're coming to the end of the podcast here. I think it's you've covered a wide range of subjects. I think that we could sort of reinterpret the epic, because while there's lots of epic examples out there, you know, Google is your friend if you really want to see some classic industry failures out here. But what we're actually focused on is the human being in the work environment. And that capacity to improve in what who we are, and to do that within a social environment, and with leaders that help us get better, that actually have an interest in us to get better, and it's not just instrumental. It's a, do you want to add a few sentences on that, Nick?
I'll just end with, you know, I think from a young age, stories throughout life, throughout the history of humanity have been used to teach, right? And I think unless we share those stories, unless we have sessions like this where, you know, we can turn around and say, oh, you know, I know someone done this, or I've done this, or, oh, have you heard this story about, I know this ant that walks through the jungle and this happens to them? Unless we can, you know, share this information, we can't process it and learn from it. So I think, you know, failure is good. Sharing of failure, sharing of success, and sharing of experiences is what leads to better performance and better leadership, in my view.
Providing a safe space for me is the most important thing. Give people a safe space to speak.
Yeah.
And then whether you like it or you don't, you know, you can have that conversation afterwards. But ultimately, if you try and silence people, I think that is the worst possible thing that you can do in any organization, especially if that communication comes from anybody in what you would perceive to be a higher hierarchical person in an organization that is set up like that, or even just someone who holds a title in a leadership role. It can just literally be so damaging. So I think providing that safe space and sharing, like Nick said, is absolutely right. Share as much as you possibly can. Share as many failures as you can. I actually think we should put this in our business straight away. Like, let's actually really see what things went wrong in the company and actually talk about them weekly. Like, that was the other point at the beginning of this conversation, was how often are people doing it? You know, looking at previous performance, what went wrong, and, you know, having a rigid hand on that doesn't help anybody. Let's just keep talking about where there's been some screw-ups. And having a laugh about it and working out how we can make sure it doesn't happen again is a much better way to move forward. I've enjoyed the conversation, though. I always do.
Thank you. Krista?
I think truthfulness, having that transparency and that honesty to build trust. I think having that trust is kind of a central pin, central foundation that lots of these other buzzwords that we've been using hang off.
I think that's, yeah. Well, listen, Nick, Chris, and Jess, thank you very much for this episode of the Empowered Teams podcast. To everybody out there, if you like it, then please press like and please subscribe. And to everybody, we'll see you on the next one. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good week.
Cheers. Bye. Have a good week.